Well, here we are with episode 1F10, Homer and Apu, originally aired on February 10th, 1994. This is David Silverman, supervising director.
And I'm Mark Kirkland, director of the episode, and we're in the recording room here about almost 10 years after this aired.
Are we? Oh, my God. Thanks for that. This is David Merkin, executive producer and showrunner, and obviously getting very old. Thanks for pointing that out.
I'm Greg Daniels, and this was my first episode as a writer on The Simpsons. I was a co-producer.
Wow. Really great first episode. I didn't know
terrific
it was the first one.
Terrific first episode. Really? I was, like, so close to firing him, and then I read this, and I got a little bit closer, but then I bet, no, it was great, and it was always great to have Greg with us. He was always a great contributor to the show.
Absolutely. Although you tried to fire me a few times, but that was all right.
Hopefully today I'm going to be able to fire all of you. That's I sort of missed that ability.
So this was, I think, a story that Mike and Al had come up with.
That is correct. That is correct. Mike and Al left us this idea, which I remember being very intrigued with and very excited about. And Greg, he was a good person to volunteer, I think. You're always like, would step up. You know, if there was something that needed to be done, he would get excited about it, and he would do it, and he would throw himself into it. And it was great that he took on this story. It was a great combination. Now, of course, I wouldn't be surprised if this is Mike, because Homer's eating bad meat again, which is something that fit Al and Mike, but I think particularly Al, too, loves, because Homer eating bad stuff is sort of based on Al eating a sandwich that had gone
that
would not stop, yeah. And Al has not changed much either.
I'm sure you guys have mentioned that thing that was on the roof for so long, that Carmel. Must have come up 100 times.
That's right. There was a writing room that had this terrible piece of Carmel that someone had put up there, and it just stayed there. And it was, you know, you're in this writing room. You know, we would typically write until 10 at night, 2 in the morning, sometimes that late.
And I remember this.
Yeah, this was a great joke, I got to say.
It's a fantastic sound.
I love how many barks that was. That's
This is like this is almost Bob and Ray like time.
What are they saying?
Dog and sell.
Really, really well done, the dog barking. But you'd be in this. We'd be stuck in these rooms, you know, for 14 hours a day. This tiny little room and with a lot of sugar and everything, and you get really depressed. And you kind of your eyes would wander up, and you just see this horrible, gross Carmel on the ceiling, and that would only get you even more depressed than you already were, that you were stuck in this room for your life.
Did you have that? I can't remember whether you actually had it or whether I just kept thinking about it in the room, but there was a clock that Hamaker Schlemmer had that counted your life backward.
Well, what actually happened, and by the way, this is the first commentary, you know, without our creator, Matt Groening, who had a previous commitment that he couldn't get out of today.
And I saw him eating some bad meat.
We fed him some bad meat to kind of have a thing to ourselves. But he says hello and sends his love to almost everyone. But it is true that Matt actually came upon a clock like that. I used to talk about the clock.
Yeah.
And then Matt, I think someone actually gave him that clock, which actually did count down. You put in your age.
And whether you're a smoker or not.
And whether you're a smoker or not. And then it would count down how many hours you had left. You could watch it count your life down. Obviously, if you psychologically got hooked up. This, by the way, is terrific.
Great job, Mark. And I got to say, Homer saying, "No way am I going to wear a freaking wire," was a great piece of performance.
I think we were thinking of some Al Pacino movie there.
His acting.
I got to work with a really wonderful crew on this episode, including Bob Anderson, who's a wonderful director. He assisted me on this episode and did fine animation throughout. Another person who did some outstanding animation coming up is Matt Nastic. So keep your eye out for that hot dog rolling on the floor. Here we go.
Yes, this is a great job with the hot dog. Watch this. Oh, it's got everything on it for just that little. But you know, when we have the POV of the hat first coming in, and you see, I love Apu's expression when he's just watching the hat and looking. It just looks great. And also here, when he leans into the camera, is perfect.
Nice lighting, too, by the way. the shadows.
He can't stop. Yes, Homer sees a messed up hot dog and it makes him want one. It's just something's not working.
Notice the little sweat that Apu has there.
Yes.
It's cool.
Very nicely done.
The wheels of justice move very fast on The Simpsons, I notice.
Sir, I was only following standard procedure.
Ah, true. But it's also standard procedure to blame any problems on a scapegoat or sacrificial lamb.
Uh-huh. And if I can obtain for you these animals?
I'm sorry, Apu. I have...
And he's a vegetarian, too.
If I can obtain for you these animals. That's funny.
You know,
I don't remember any of this.
What was that one?
It's all as if it's new to me. This is a good line.
One of the things that's interesting when we do an episode, and we did more of them in these seasons, you know, it was always a goal of mine to do more stories about more characters that were more in depth with the characters. That was sort of what, you know, I loved the show up to this point. Absolutely my favorite show, and I so enjoyed watching it. But every time we have, like, a new showrunner come on, there's always an interest in sort of changing it to keep it fresh. And the main thing that we were trying to do during these years was to go a little deeper into character, a little deeper into story. And, you know, as we did in the Mr. Burns Rosebud episode, we were doing this in the Apu episode. And there's always the thing that comes up with these kind of shows, which is if you're doing an episode that shows a minority character like Apu and shows him in not a great light, people go, whoa, how can you do that? And... like, you know, the answer is always, there's no one worse in the show than the White Wasp. There's no one worse in the show than that guy. So it allows us to go anywhere and do anything because everybody in The Simpsons basically is an idiot. Everyone is put down. No one is better than anyone else. And everyone is equally attacked. And that's
thinking,
the theory and the philosophy of the show. So basically we can do anything, yeah.
It is time to settle the score.
The thing I remember about that, because I remember it was unusual to, I think it was the first time Apu had his own episode.
Right.
And there was some debate over how's it going to work as him as the lead and everything. And I remember the thing I was most, I guess, proud of or interested in was the Act Two break when he's singing on the rooftop.
Yes.
And I thought that was a little bit of heart for Apu, and that kind of helped you.
No, we really get into Apu and his good qualities and his bad qualities. And by the way, that was an act break there that would have gone commercial, and part of the joke there is that Homer was apparently screaming through the entire commercial.
the thing
we were trying to achieve. And of course, this again, you know, as we wind up traveling, and we'll talk about that when we actually do, and this will be the first real big trip in a way that Homer ever took, I think. And there was a lot of discussion about that.
I resisted that a lot.
Yes,
I remember saying to you, Homer, it's been established that Homer makes $200 a week. How the hell did he afford a plane trip to India?
There was a lot of talk about whether or not a Homer could afford to go to India with Apu when he winds up going with him. And to me, I was always aware of The Simpsons having what I like to call a flexible reality. That some shows follow some rules, some shows follow other rules, and moments within shows follow different rules of physical nature and of character. And that kind of flexibility is really, I think, the genius of the show, because it has this kind of amazing Dada-esque freedom that goes all the way from completely real to all the way to one of my favorite moments in the show is in a Conan show where the monorail show where the Siamese twins are cut in half by the anchor, and then they high-five each other. You know, and that didn't say that whole episode was that crazy, but we could throw that moment in for a second. And the fact that we've killed Moleman, who's that little tiny guy, guys, I don't know if you know what we call him, Mole Man, but we kill him again and again and again. And that kind of reality made it so that I didn't worry that Homer had the money. And of course, you know, since that argument, the Simpsons now travel way, way beyond their means all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
We do jokes where Bart will just go up to Homer and say, can I have $1,500? And Homer will take $1,500 out of his wallet just so we actually even, you know, really hit people over the head with the fact that it's insane or strange at that particular moment.
But you were definitely the guy that opened it up, I would say, because I remember the Conan one was kind of an anomaly.
Right. It wasn't. It was controversial at the time, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's it. We're not always all in agreement. And you know, sometimes you do have to fight for what you believe in. And it helps when you're running the show that you'll hopefully get your way. And that was great. You know, whoever really comes in and runs the show is generally given their head. you know, to take in a direction they believe in. And that's something, that kind of freedom and that kind of support's given by Jim Brooks, you know, to sort of really let us experiment and let us...
I didn't get that off.
It's
nice that we can do that because it's, I think, helped the show... like develop in different ways. You don't expect, and sometimes there's a certain direction we don't always follow, or we've maybe, oh, we're not going to really follow that anymore, we just get tired of that direction, but we keep trying things, and yeah, it gives us a great deal of freedom. And I think the Dadaism is what works, it makes it work.
It does, and the fantastic thing is being able to go into the Dadaism for a moment and then come out. One of the things I've always loved about The Simpsons is that you can have the craziest moment, and then that can be followed by something that actually makes you cry.
Oh, look at that. Where shopping is a baffling ordeal.
Yes, that's a great.
That was great.
That's a fantastic thing. And I think this was our first trip to one of these type stores.
Yeah, exactly. The first time we were designing this. Yeah, is a big thing for
all
the design
these, all these props had to be designed and the scale.
I think we heard about this, about how much work it was for you guys. And again, thank you. Oh. You did an amazing job.
Well, we don't like to draw big too often, so this made an exception. But see, those are very expensive props to make, actually. Even though we draw them big, right? It was just a lot of money.
Yes, there's a lot of pancakes here.
I know. That was expensive. All that paint.
I love this line. It's all happening again. So clearly he's killed some other woman somewhere that we haven't seen. Very nicely done animation here. So you have a giant Day After Tomorrow type movie in one little episode of The Simpsons. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And just, and then
1,000 items or less, by the way, is the line they're in.
That old man up front, he is starved for it.
Now we have a nice grandpa story.
Yes, this is one of the early endless grandpa stories.
Yes.
1957, I remember it was.
And it's very observational because I always seem to pick the line that has the person that has something going on that stops it dead. Hopefully, of the many people that hear this, they will stop doing that. be aware in line that
to
we don't want to
educate. Point.
I like that too. Only cash, no chit chat. I mean, that's sort of what I'm about, going to the grocery store.
Yep, single men, yep.
That's it. 75, 85, 90. And of course,
James Woods. Absolutely. One of the most fantastic guest stars we've ever had. You know, a lot of guest stars come in to do this show, and they're a little nervous because they've never done, this voiceover thing or radio thing before, and they're a little out of their element. James Woods is a fearless guy, and he was so excited to do it. He's such a huge fan of the show. And I wanted him in the show. He was one of, like, when I came onto the show, I had a list of people that I wanted to do, and he was very, very high on it. And he came in and so nailed it, was so funny right off the top of his head, and ad-libbed a few things. He was really, really a dream. And it's an interesting story because he wasn't originally going to be in this episode. We had figured it for Michael Caine, right?
Yeah, Michael Caine. The idea behind Michael Caine was that he would do any movie.
Any job at all.
We wrote to the fact that Michael Caine sort of appeared in everything, and he's been in a lot of movies where.
But he wasn't researching for a movie. He was just working at the Quickie Mart because he needed a job. He had an
in
open
between
week.
Gigs.
In between gigs, and he was on the phone with his agent, which we kept a version of this in for James Wood, where he was considering Jaws 4 or something like that, where the shark was actually going to come up and attack him while he was on the toilet. And it's the same kind of style joke where he's on the phone going, first of all, you know, how would a shark, you know, get into the sewer system and come up the toilet? And then you hear an unknown conversation on the other end, and he goes, well, actually, that sounds pretty believable.
Well, they also had the joke that we're talking about that Grandpa comes in and says, wow, Michael Caine, you were great in Alf. And he said, I think you mean Alfie. No, Alf, you were the guy working the puppet, right? His eyes dart back and forth. Why, no. Why would
no,
you think
that wasn't me. So Michael Caine, for whatever reason, well, actually, it's an interesting reason, which has been a history of The Simpsons, which I don't know whether they've talked about. Actors over a certain age, and now that we've been on for such a long time, this rule is a little different. But we used to have a huge, difficult time getting people that were past their mid-50s to do the show because it just wasn't on their radar. They really didn't understand what it was about or what it was or why it was popular, and they had never really seen it. So it was always hard to get people in that age range to get it. And to come do the show. I'm not saying Michael was necessarily that old, but he might have been in the ballpark at that point. And by the way, Greg, that's just a fantastic song.
That was great. And really,
it's the upcoming part that I like the best.
Fun to do.
Up here. I remember we kind of room wrote that song, I believe.
Well, it's just really, I thought the choreography was great. Mark. It is really wonderful.
My favorite part is the awkward choreography at the end when they're just standing there.
Exactly.
And then they have to go sit down and everything. You don't ever see that. And you purposely made it awkward.
This is great.
I love how he hits that note.
Like a dog howling.
Also, this is part of our elastic. You talk about elastic stories. Here it's established you can see the Quickie Mart from the top of their house. We do that in animation to fit the story all the time.
It's fantastic to be able to do that. We have another story that I did, which is the parking lot of the power plant actually comes right up to there. He takes this long commute, but the parking lot is so large that it actually abuts the back fence.
Yes, that was great. I love that. I remember
and that's
that.
How
that
far his parking space is from the place once he parks too. And we can change it. We change it every week. That kind of flexibility to me is so stimulating as a writer because you're not locked in anything. You can really let your imagination go nuts and never get tired.
This is a great.
This sequence is wonderful.
A great shoot.
Yeah. Nice mislead.
Right.
We do the Lawrence of Arabia thing, and they're only going to Springfield Airport because they couldn't afford a cab. Which spoke to Greg's
Shrek
concern.
Two. Shrek 2 took this from us.
Oh, that's right, they did.
That's right. It's all
Shrek 2.
We're going to have to try and get compensated for that.
Day
after
tomorrow and Shrek 2 so far from this
episode. By the way,
so we'll get the lawyers on that first thing.
The great thing about, I think, working for James, we'll just talk about this, is the fact that he has so many pauses, and like this very, very studied way that people would stutter and express themselves.
Well, I love that it was left in the voice track and it wasn't kind of cleaned up and it was animated to all those weird sounds.
When we animated
them, realistic.
We listened to the track really carefully and what this does for the animator is we put in a lot of little poses for all the tiny beats in the dialogue.
Yeah.
In this case, it's Bob Anderson, AD. Celia Kendrick, who was a new animator, came on, and we gave her one of the James Wood scenes, and she just blew us away that she was just dead on with that track. So a few people
that
animated
a
him.
See that?
That was a fantastic joke.
That's a great joke.
The
Christian joke.
Had the Christians trying to convert the...
We did so... I remember doing so much actual research into this, the Indian culture that was not used.
Well, it's
been to India a couple of times after the result of that.
No, because I think I remember the Dan McGrath had a joke, which I thought was so brilliant at some point in this, where Apu wasn't sure what to do. It might not have been for this episode. He wasn't sure what to do, and one Indian god pops up on the left shoulder and says,
I think we did that in another episode.
Was that that ever air?
I think we had that.
The elephant god says, store grain and...
I think that's all the different gods. Yeah.
This, just what Greg is saying is very true. This was sort of, again, the beginning of The Simpsons traveling and us completely destroying any culture that we would go to. And we just make terrible fun and purposely make it incredibly wrong and inaccurate and kind of hostile. But, but we're incredibly hostile to the Americans as well. Again, the point of view of The Simpsons and particularly, my point of view, which came across, is that, no place is perfect. Every place is a mess. Nobody knows what they're doing. And that's fine. That's the way the world is designed. And that's kind of funny. And so we just, to me, nothing works and nothing is right. And that's sort of what the point of view is.
Yeah. And it was a consistent point of view. It's not like we're suddenly, we're here, so now we're reverent. We're
right.
Like, what?
Right. Exactly. So we're going into the very spiritual Himalayas, which do have these amazing temples, built very, very high up, full of these incredible monks who are really, truly religious and good people and amazing. And we just turn it into a giant Quickie Mart there. And the great thing is the entire trip is what we would call, I'm going to say it in a nicer way than we call it in the room, is an incredible screw you, because they take the entire trip, and then Homer ruins the questions by asking the three questions, and Apu learns nothing. So all that money that Greg was worried about was all spent for no reason.
That's the part I was most worried about.
It was expensive, and we had to do all these designs. I mean, it was all for naught. I feel sorry for the designers who did all that stuff. Squishy machine.
And by the way, in addition to the great animation by Mark, there's a fantastic performance here by Hank.
I love the Homer J. Fong on that list there. That cracked me up in animation and makes me laugh today.
It's the perfect, it really builds. Yeah. I mean, you read down the list, he's getting more and more desperate to fool somebody with a check. And each one apparently worked. That's what's great. You know?
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite visuals.
I had meant that to be in black and white, and I don't know how we got that in full color. But.
Yeah, it's still.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes. Yeah. Well, that was predicting the future when all cameras eventually became in
color. It syndicates better that way.
Exactly.
Hey, pal. Was it ever going to be Jailbird, or was it always going to be another?
I was just thinking that. Is it, why wasn't this Jailbird? And there's really absolutely no reason that this shouldn't have been Snake. I think we were sort of thinking to maybe mix it up a little bit, but now I'm sorry we did, and I don't care how much it costs, I think we're going to replace it with Snake.
I think maybe we thought he was just, you didn't really want to see Jailbird actually shooting up who.
But I think later he did.
I think so, later, it doesn't matter.
He beats the crap out of people, and we don't care now, but they were more sensitive.
Homer's been shot about 40 times.
Didn't care about the religious aspects of the show, but to preserve Snake's character as a hero, as a likable hero, someone who couldn't shoot Apu is important.
That's right.
I love this explanation.
It's a great explanation that an old bullet actually actually worked as armor for the new bullet. And as a small
token of my appreciation. Oh, that's a great design on James Woods.
Oh, you know, again, Mark, it's incredible. You just captured him, and I've talked to James since then. And most of the litigation has been put behind us. And he was just thrilled with his portrayal.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
He was.
That's great. I'm wondering if this helped him get the gig on Hercules when he played Hades, just because I don't know if anybody thought of him doing a cartoon voice before, but it's so fantastic.
I mean, certainly this show has been pioneering in this concept, and I think it has been taken in those huge movies. You say, hey, let's get big people because they're going to do great work for us, and they have. We've been so lucky to have the parade of stars come through here and do the show. It's so much fun directing them. You know, our own cast is fantastic. And it's great to bring in these other great actors from outside because it also stimulates the cast. The cast gets so excited, and they work even harder, and they love to all get together in a room. We do it like a radio show, and everyone is together, and they can see each other, and they do a little bit of movement, and it just really pumps the cast up when we get a great actor from the outside to come in and mix things up and change the formula a little bit.
And we're sitting in the same chairs that the cast usually sits in.
That's right. And we're so much funnier than they are.
Much.
Yeah.
But we're funnier together.
Yeah, we are.
By the way, I like the fact that you do the watch gag twice. You know, like at we're everything really wrapped up, much earlier than usual, and then you do the watch gag at the end.
Yes.
Or the hug. Oh, we have still some time.
Well, they were ahead of time from the first act break. Yeah,
it was two self-conscious time jokes.